97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. And today, the sentencing for Brian Koberger after the 2022 stabbing deaths of four University of Idaho students. Brief search, they found him. Four consecutive life sentences for Koberger. Joining us now is someone that you hear on the station and one of my favorite people to talk to, chief legal analyst and partner at Harris Dahl Fisher & Young, Brad Young. Hello, sir.
Talk to you, sir.
You know, at this court today, there was a lot of victim statements and family members talking about how this impacted their life, emotional statements that you heard today. So first, your reaction, this was a plea agreement. He has four consecutive life sentences. In a moment like this, is there even a chance he'll see outside of a prison cell?
No. The answer is no to that. And he's never getting out, particularly with four consecutive life sentences. Even if he would get parole on one life sentence, since there will be served consecutively, he's never getting out.
Is that the advantage of serving consecutively? You know, I always think of it as, well, you get to serve the sentences at the same time. Thus, let's say you had two consecutive five-year sentences. So instead of doing 10 years, you only get to do five. It always seemed like they were cheating the victims. But in an instance like this, this would make sure he doesn't get out.
Well, sometimes you do get to serve sentences, what's called concurrently at the same time. Mm-hmm. But those are only dealing with lesser charges. This was specifically found by the judge to be consecutive. So he's never getting out. Also, the part, and this doesn't make it okay. I'm not arguing that he's in a good place at all. But also there's something called jailhouse justice. And given the kind of murders this guy did, he is not going to be a popular guy in prison. So if anyone thinks, oh, he's getting off easy because he's not going to be executed, he's going to be facing, he's going to be running from his life every single day in prison. And frankly, that sounds like pretty good justice to me.
Yeah. And when you're a high profile case like this, it's on all the TVs inside the prison. They know exactly who this guy is, what he did. And then he listened to some of these victim statements. I'm sure they heard that, which I'm sure was very emotional for some of the people on the inside, too. They're probably even thinking about what's going to happen next when this person gets in there who has no shot. But for the most part, like, this guy had almost no emotion on his face. It didn't seem like he cared that he took four lives of these students. So he's going to go in there, and it sounds like he might not even be scared.
Well, he's not scared right now because he's got a bailiff guarding him. All right. But wait till he gets in the prison, you know, with Bubba and Muhammad, and he might change.
Yep. So when he's inside, does he get to write books? What is he allowed to do? What is he not allowed to do?
Well, under federal law and state law, you cannot profit off of your crime. So, you know, for example, I believe that O.J. Simpson wrote a book. And it was blocked from being sold, because you can't profit from a crime. And the same would be true here. Now, having said that, I think there are some exceptions to that. Like if a person writes the book, but all the proceeds go to some other charity or some other third party, that may or may not be allowed, but you yourself as the criminal cannot profit off of your crime.
Okay. Yeah, I guess the next thing we hear about this is when he's in the news and there'll be something along the lines of brutal beating following his name. I'm sure that'll be the next time we hear from him. But the thing is, like, these families that have been through this and they lose someone they love, someone close to them, they think about the potential and everything they had to live for. The consolation of this guy getting beat up and tortured inside of a prison is not something that consoles them. It means nothing. All they think about is the person they lost.
Correct. And you know, the problem that we currently have with our death penalty situation in this country is this. In reality, the death penalty serves two purposes. This is black letter straight from first year law school. Serves two purposes. Number one, it imposes justice for the crime on the perpetrator of the crime. And number two, it operates as a deterrent for additional crime. So let's apply those two those two rationales for the death penalty to this current situation. If he were not to have pled guilty and would have gone to trial, I have no doubt he would have gotten the death penalty. However, whether it's in Idaho or any other state, even in Texas, it takes about 20 to 25 years on death row before a person is executed. Mm-hmm. So the frustration from my perspective is that when you delay it so long, you are essentially thwarting, when I say you, I mean the government, is essentially thwarting both of those purposes. Number one, mm-hmm. it doesn't serve as justice to give somebody a death penalty, and then they get 20 years to live their life before they actually have to be executed. And number two, it doesn't operate as a deterrence because every criminal knows, hey, worst thing that can happen is I get the death penalty, which means I get another 20 years to live. So that's, to me, is what's frustrating about the death penalty in this country, is that it doesn't truly serve either of those two justifications.
Yeah. You know, later in the show, this is going to be another big interview based on the lawsuit that was filed, but Michigan Attorney General Andrew Bailey is going to join us. And you may have saw he's suing Planned Parenthood for allegedly yes. lying to patients about the risks of the abortion pill mifepristone. So what do you think about that case? Do you think there's something there?
Well, I think there is something there, and it's the Missouri Attorney General that's going to be joining you. I think you said Michigan, but we all know you meant Missouri.
You're right. Right.
That's okay. Yes. That's all right. But in this instance, there are some issues because this is also something that's always frustrated me about the so-called abortion pill. Because if you give someone an aspirin, a Tylenol, a vitamin, okay, you have to give out all of the legal disclaimers, and we've seen them. Look at the advertising on TV of any type of medication. You know, warning, it may cause colon blow. You know, I mean, they've got to give all of those yeah, disclaimers, exactly. right? But when it comes to abortion, somehow that gets a pass. So if someone gets an abortion pill, there are no requirements that they go through this litany of problems that could happen if you take that pill. And so that's really the basis of Attorney General Bailey's lawsuit in this instance, is because why should an abortion pill get a pass? Why should an abortion bill be treated, or abortion pill be treated differently than Tylenol, you know, than any other drug for high blood pressure? You know, why should it be different? And in fact, one should be able to make the argument that it should in fact be more stringent than Tylenol, because Tylenol doesn't kill a life. And Tylenol doesn't stop a beating heart. You know, Tylenol doesn't kill a being that has its own separate DNA. And so really the opposite should be true. There should be more disclaimers on an abortion pill, not less.
So let's say this goes down the line and he's successful. Does this set up perhaps like a class action suit against Planned Parenthood? Could people that took this pill say, I didn't realize the risks because they were not disclosed? You knew the risks and you decided not to disclose them. So they sue Planned Parenthood. Could you open up something even bigger after this?
It could possibly be. And in years past, again, there have been legal protections for Planned Parenthood in various situations. Again, I've never understood why those were in existence, other than, of course, the obvious. And that is the left is trying to protect the so-called and no longer right to an abortion. And so, yeah, I would hope that would open up class action lawsuits. And you know, listen, the left tried to do with litigation to the gun industry what could easily happen to the abortion industry. Let me take you back to the late 1990s. There were a flurry of class action lawsuits against every domestic gun manufacturer, and the whole point was to put them out of business. Just like the breast implant business with silicone and all of these other products in this country that have been driven out because of litigation, they tried to do it with the gun industry, and it took a legal shield law, a federal shield law, to go into in effect to prevent that from happening. So I would like to see the same strategy here, and that is having all of these class action lawsuits against abortion provider like Planned Parenthood. There would never be an opportunity to create some sort of a legal liability shield for them, and that would be it would take a while. But listen, we want to put them out of business. It could easily be done with litigation.
Do you have time for one more question?
Oh, sure. I got Ryan, I've always got time for you. I'll even drive up to Detroit and wash your car, my friend, whatever you need.
All right. I'm going to remember that just in case I really need a car wash. Now, keep in mind, my car is a beater. So if you do wash it, be careful of all the rust spots. So
okay.
The director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, making a surprise appearance today at White House press briefing, saying that she's going to take some of these findings from the Intelligence Committee and pass it along to the Justice Department, meaning that there could be something there that gets further investigation into Russiagate, implicating perhaps even the former president of the United States, Barack Obama. I know we talked about this. You were telling me it's a stretch. Has anything changed? The things that have changed in the last 24 hours may have influenced your opinion, or do you still feel the same way about this case?
Well, I still feel the same way, but let me just kind of do a very quick recap on this, because even though, and I think what we heard today is that there is Russiagate evidence that directly points to Obama, even if that's the case, even if we had a smoking gun, that we had a memo signed by Barack Obama. Now, I'm giving this as a hypothetical. This is not what came out today. But hypothetically, if there was a memo where President Obama said, I understand that this Russia influence peddling here is a complete false narrative, but we need to use the Justice Department to prosecute the president-elect. Even if that were the case, I mean, there would be, even with something that blatant, it would be difficult, if not impossible, to prosecute Obama because of the immunity that's given. Now, having said that, that same level of immunity does not apply to members of the Justice Department in the Obama administration. That's only to the president. So as this evidence comes out and directly points to the Department of Justice, there could easily be criminal implications for anyone other than the president.
Do you think, okay, looking at some of the things that we know that have been disclosed and understanding that people knew this was baloney, you know, from the very beginning, but then they further on more criminal actions, they're talking about using the criminal, well, I guess the justice system, I should probably use it that way, the justice system against Donald Trump. We saw impeachments and all of these things were brought up in a way against Donald Trump. And people knew the truth that they had something that would exonerate him, but they held back on it purposely. Is there any criminality to that?
Potentially. But even in that context, you're still in Washington, D.C., with regard to where a grand jury would sit to bring those indictments. And that, frankly, makes it difficult. You'd have to get a grand jury. Now, the good part of a grand jury is that only the prosecution presents evidence, not the defense. So they only hear one side of the issue to get an indictment. But even in Washington, D.C., I still think it would be a challenge, certainly not impossible, but it would be it would still be a challenge even in those situations.
Maybe more of the lines of perjury, something was said under oath, knowing they knew the opposite.
Now that becomes much easier, okay? And the way that the way that people get prosecuted for perjury is if you got a document that says one thing, where they said one thing in a document or an email, and then that same person said something else in another document, email, or before a court, or you have them applying for a warrant based upon information, and then you've got information from an email that disproves that there was a basis for the warrant. Those situations, Ryan, you could get an indictment, even in Washington, D.C., because it's very clear that they were perjuring themselves when they made assertions to the court that was the basis to either get warrants or do further investigations.
Yeah. You know, if I were Donald Trump, I would say, all this time I've been telling you the truth. You've called me a liar this whole time. All right, Brad Young, Chief Legal Analyst, partner with Hairstyle Fisher & Young. Thank you so much for joining us here this afternoon. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Ryan. Anytime.